Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Engaging Internal Comms, the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with new ideas and innovations in our profession. Hello, my name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. I hope you've had a chance to listen to our first two episodes, which featured Arafa Hennigan from AO in episode 1, who was talking all about the importance of building a brand from the inside out, and episode 2, which was with Dave Algio, where Dave was talking about the importance of getting a return on investment from a well-being program. We've got some really interesting interviews coming up in future weeks. Next week, I'm going to be talking to Graham Ward from INSEAD, who's going to be telling us all about the importance of personal purpose and organizational purpose. And I know purpose is something, particularly organizational purpose, is something that internal communicators are always really interested in, and how we communicate that effectively. So that's going to be a really interesting episode. Graham's got some really interesting personal stories. The other thing I just wanted to let you know is that we now have a Facebook group and also a Facebook page. The Facebook group is a private group, and it's with the intention there is to start a little community of people who listen to the show. I'm hoping to get some of the interviewees to join that group as well. And the idea is that we can network, we can share ideas, I can share some of the background to the show itself and some of the interviews that we're planning on having in the future. And also I can get some ideas and thoughts from you, our listeners, about the sort of things that you'd like us to be covering in future episodes. So I really hope you can join us there. I'll put the link to it in the show notes. The Facebook page itself is at facebook.com/engagingic. That's facebook.com/engagingic. The group has got a really strange URL with lots of numbers and letters in it. So I will put the link to that in the show notes, because it's pointless reading it out on the show here. I decided to go with Facebook because I know not everybody uses Facebook for personal use, for business use. It's more of a personal use platform, but LinkedIn groups aren't very good. And to set up a community, Facebook is probably the easiest to moderate and run. So I hope you can join us there. And again, the links to that will be in the show notes. We also have a mailing list on our website, and I'll mention a little bit more about that at the end of the show. So www.engagingic.com is the website for the podcast itself, where you can find out lots more information. You can sign up for our mailing list, and we'll let you know about future episodes that are coming out. Anyway, that's enough of that. And so now it's on to today's interview. Today, on this third episode of Engaging Internal Comms, I wanted to look at an area which sometimes can be a little bit taboo, which is how do we engage older workers within our organizations? We're living in a multi-generational age, and there's a lot of emphasis on millennials and younger employees within our organizations. And I think sometimes we forget that actually that we do have older employees within the organizations who can make a legitimate contribution. The interview today was based on a talk that I'd heard at a conference, and our interviewee was the speaker there. And I thought it was really interesting that the approach that he had and the mindset that he had in order to make sure that organizations don't really miss out on a really key part of their workforce and engage them appropriately. So we're going to be looking at areas that really look at why we shouldn't stereotype older workers, why we shouldn't assume that they are not available or amenable to change, and that how a multi-generational workforce can be a real benefit for your organization, both from an engagement perspective and also from a communications perspective. So I think you'll find this a really interesting interview. Hello. So today's interview is about an area that we don't normally talk about in internal comms and engagement, and this is about cross-generational workforce. So my interviewee today is Martin Fitzpatrick, who's fulfilled a number of roles, senior internal communications roles at a number of organizations since 2013. So he's worked for Vodafone, B&Q, and more latterly, British BT. He's a certified member of the Institute of Internal Communications. And it's Martin Fitzpatrick. Hello, Martin. How are you?
Hello, Craig. I'm very well, thank you. Yes, very well.
Fun, Fantastic. And I think you're based down in, are you in Swindon? Am I correct?
I am, yes. Sunny Swindon, the jewel of the Southwest.
And how sunny is Swindon today?
Is it particularly grey. Particularly grey and overcast, yes.
Excellent. Well, yeah, we've had a bit of sun here up in the north, but yeah. Anyway, well, fantastic. It's great to speak to you. And how we met, Martin, was at the IOIC conference last year in May in Bath, and you were speaking about this whole area of cross-generational workforce. And I know you were at B&Q at the time, and it really resonated with me. One reason was, as I'm over 50, and that was the sort of the point at which we were talking about, you know, people in the sort of later stages of their career, let's put it politely. But what you'd also said, which I thought was really interesting, there's a 1 in 3 UK workers are now over 50, 1 in 7 over 75, which I thought was really interesting. And I think the other thing that was really, really struck me was that I knew the grey pound is a common term, £473 billion spent by over 50s every year. So, I think, you know, and it's resonated with me because I think sometimes we see people as over 50 as when they get to that point in life, they suddenly become unchangeable. They have no ambition. The kind of fire has gone from their belly, which I would strongly disagree with being an over 50. But I guess if we start, you know, when we talk about cross-generational workforce, it might sound obvious, but what's your take on that, Martin? How do you sort of define this cross-generational workforce idea?
Yeah, so I think there's lots of stats out in the world now, so we won't rehash them. But you know, we are approaching the point where there's multiple generations in any business here, particularly in larger businesses. Less so in SME, but particularly in larger businesses, you're starting to see this work through not just of millennials, which has been a hot topic kind of for the last, you know, feels like forever, but certainly the last 4 or 5 years, this idea of bringing millennials into the workforce and how do you attract and retain them. But, you know, increasingly we're starting to see though millennials are moving into management positions and taking up more and more kind of those first, I guess, first leadership roles in the workforce now. But that does also leave, there's a new generation flowing in behind, and there's the existing workforce, the long-term are people who are, you know, in their 50s, 60s, you know, and even 70s, all working in that same environment, which is, you know, on the one hand, it's quite challenging, but on the other hand, I mean, I don't know why people seem surprised when we talk about the subject, because that's society, right? That is you look across the communities in which we live and work, that is representative of the societies we live in. And, you know, as healthcare improves, as society generally improves, we're definitely seeing people stay in the workplace longer and ages of people when, you know, historically you might consider someone who was in their 60s on the verge of retirement increasing. That's just not true.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I totally agree. And I know when you spoke, you were talking about, you know, the initiative at B&Q, which was very much about reflecting the communities in which the businesses were based or your stores were based at the time. And I know I remember another statistic that you put out, which was that 25% of people over 50s had said they were the service. I think if I remember this right, or I've wrote this down right, we're not sort of treated equally because of their age. So I think there was an element there of you know, customer empathy of having people serving you who are like you, you know, in a sort of a positive way. So the initiative that you were doing at B&Q at the time was all around embracing the idea of a cross-generational workforce. What did that involve from an engagement and comms perspective?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of before we get into the tactics, a couple of reasons why it's important. So so the 25% of people statistic was specifically you know, there was some, it wasn't research we did, it's research that's readily available.
Right.
Which is that 25% of people feel like they receive poorer service when they go to stores and restaurants based purely upon their age. So they're in an environment and they feel they are treated differently because they are older than other customers within the same store who are younger. You know, and that's important for a couple of reasons. I mean, just one mind-blowing stat is that 65% of new cars are bought by older workers, by older people, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, and £473 billion, you know, is their spend. So if 25% of that £473 billion of spending is receiving a poor service that they are unhappy with, there is a real opportunity for businesses there to say, well, you know, if we can produce a better experience for those people, that is, you know, a significant amount of money we can attract to be spent with us rather than with competitors. So that's kind of some of the financial reasons why you might care. But then more anecdotally, particularly when I was in B&Q, what we find when we found when we talked to customers was they actually really valued some of our older colleagues. That's not to say they didn't value the interaction with the younger colleagues. Everybody brings a different skill kind of into the game, I guess. But particularly, you know, older shoppers definitely felt that they were more comfortable speaking to members of staff who were perhaps older. And they also, there was a perception, you know, rightly or wrongly, that our older employees would have better knowledge of the industry, better knowledge of the challenges customers were facing, and would be able to be more empathetic of the challenges they were facing in, you know, creating a good home for themselves and for their families. So, there was a lot of reasons why you would want to, both, you know, financially from a customer experience perspective, but then also from a colleague experience perspective. You know, there's loads of, we'll probably come to it later on, but there's lots of advantages to having a mixture of people just starting out in their careers, people who are kind of, I guess, in the meat of their careers and looking to kind of, you know, build those next steps into leadership or diverge into different areas of the business kind of as they're in their 30s and 40s. And then those people who are kind of in their 50s, 60s, 70s, who are starting to look for opportunities to, you know, get more from the world of work than perhaps just career development or just financial reward. And so if you can give each of those communities the thing they value most, suddenly there's a really dynamic business with lots of you know, positive reinforcement around what each of those communities want from their work. I mean, and obviously we are you know, generalizing wildly, but it's such a big community of people, there's no other way to build a strategy. So there was a lot of work done, particularly at B&Q, but I see it increasingly at the other businesses I've worked at as well, actually, to start to look at how can we get the best of each of these groups of employees by giving them the thing they really value most from work. And what's really interesting is, you know, when you dig into some of the research, and there isn't vast amounts of research, which is a real shame. But when you look at the research that is out there, the drivers are so very different for each of those communities. And there's all kinds of weird cultural myths we have about older workers, you know, things like they don't really care about the businesses they're working in, they're getting ready to retire, they're kind of they're on the glide path out, and so it's not worth investing in. All of these things kind of bubble up when you talk to people, and yet when you look at the research, none of it's true. Like when you talk to you know, people in their 50s or 60s, generally they're in their second or third career and they've picked their current career because it really resonates with them and they're looking for purpose much more than they perhaps might have done when they were younger, when they were looking for opportunities to advance and opportunities to develop. Now they're looking for a business they really find purposeful, that resonates with them on a very personal level. And then, you know, the other bit is, you know, there's this myth that if I hire an older worker, they're somehow more risky. They may not be around for as long. And if I hire someone in their 30s, I'll build a career with my business. But the stats show that, you know, under 50, their average tenure is 2 years. If you hire a worker over 50, their average tenure is 5 years. You know, so if you again, if we just got back to pure financials, the cost of kind of hiring, retraining and embedding a new worker, you can half that pretty much overnight by just changing your perception of the people you're hiring into your business.
Wow. I mean, there's some incredible, I mean, there's loads there I'd like to dive into. I mean, it's interesting what you just said there around, you know, the kind of risk factor. Yesterday, when we had a quick conversation yesterday, just to talk this through, or was it the day before? Anyway, earlier this week. I went to the people management. Well, I basically just did a Google search on, you know, cross-generational workforce. Cause I was going to ask you this question on definition. And I came up with, there was a, I won't mention the name of it for political correctness reasons. But anyway, it was a very reputable website, one that we often probably visit, in the HR profession. And it had three headings. So it was cross-generational workforce, and the three headings were sick pay, cancer, and mental health. And it was just like, okay, so that's the kind of stereotypical issues that we think about when we think about an older, a cross-generational workforce, and an older generation workforce. One thing I just want to pick up with you there, though, you talked about, and I know, as you said, this has been something that's mirrored across the other businesses that you work for and are working for. Is the idea that this may only work at somewhere like B&Q because demographically, DIY tends to appeal to kind of people who've got more spare time, perhaps already retired. So I guess when we're talking about this idea of having people who kind of know what they're talking about from a DIY, what I'm imagining is there are probably other areas of work, though. It's not just limited to to people working in a DIY store where we've got all the generational people who happen to know what they're talking about. Is that fair enough to say that there are other businesses other than retail, DIY retail, that people can add more value to the customers they're serving with that increased maturity, wisdom, etc., and knowledge of the product?
Yeah, I think that is absolutely fair to say. It's interesting. I spoke at Social Media Week down in Bristol last year as well on a similar topic. And it's interesting, some of the perceptions that, yes, older workers would work in somewhere like B&Q where the audience, the customer base maybe is older, but it wouldn't work for us because we're a digital company or we're a media company or we work in IT services. I mean, the reality is if you are someone who's in your 50s and 60s right now, social media is relatively new, but not entirely new. You were still using it when you were in your 30s, probably, or a different ilk, and maybe not as embedded. But things like IT services or consultancy, I mean, that is absolute nonsense that older workers moving into their second or third career couldn't pick that up and couldn't work with that, because actually most of these people are the people who built the infrastructure we're using today. They were, most of these guys, they were using IT when they went through a massive transformation. There's the other logical fallacy is older people don't deal with change well. That is a demonstrable nonsense. They went through and have worked and lived through some of the biggest changes to the workplace that will perhaps may ever happen, short of, AI taking over entirely, which is a move from paper-based to IT-based businesses. They've been through the introduction of word processing, the introduction of PCs in the office, then into the home, and then cloud computing has arrived through their time. If you look across the other generations in the workplace, they have, the common language is change is the norm for them, which is, probably true. The kind of huge seismic shifts that have happened, it's really only workers in their 50s and 60s who have lived through every single one of those in the workplace and have stories to tell, experience to pass on. They can deal with change because they have, and they continue to do so. So I think whichever industry you're working in, you will have opportunities here, and more importantly, what businesses don't tend to really do is work with their older colleagues, but again, those guys in 50s or 60s, not a term I particularly like, but there's no other way to describe them, I don't think firms do a great job of working with older colleagues to say, hey, what did you do before you came here? What other skills do you have that we get? You might not want to do that as a full-time role anymore, but might you want to share some of those experiences with some of our younger workers? Might you want to just dip into some side projects that are not directly aligned to your current role, but actually we're going to get free consultancy services around marketing or around IT or around transformation or pick a job. There's probably somebody in your business has done it who is not doing that right now today, but might be willing to lean in and lend a hand if you were to ask, if you knew enough about them.
Absolutely. No, I can. I mean, I think organizations are pretty poor at that, regardless of what age they are. I remember when I, one of my jobs, I'd, I'd, uh, I'd worked for a number of years in water treatment, and I went to the food industry, and the site that I always had a problem with, the water treatment works, and nobody, you know, I kind of kept putting my hand up, like, I can probably help you sort it out. I know I'm not in that role. I'm in a kind of an administrative role now, but I have like used to manage these things, or at least I could probably ring someone who could come and have a look at it for you and sort it out. But it was like, no, we must, you know, anyway. So yeah, I think that's frustrating. One thing I just want to go over, because I think, again, if I was listening to this, I'd probably think, okay, because you've talked a little bit about second careers or third careers. So by that, we're talking about people who've maybe, you know, had a long-term career somewhere, maybe two or three careers somewhere. Now they're coming to an organization already in that sort of, you know, later stages of their career, and joining and bringing all of this experience and richness. I just want to kind of just clarify, is there a differentiation, or is there a difference between people who've maybe been with, who have done that, and also what I would maybe describe as, you know, people who've been, so disparagingly sometimes referred to as lifers, people who've been there, you know, for 20-25 years. Is there a difference to the way that we get the best out of them versus the people who are coming in maybe with a little bit more choice, and maybe, you know, they're doing it because it's a lifestyle thing, and they're probably doing it for income as well. What's your thoughts around that?
It's interesting. I don't think there's any one answer to this. I think what you probably need to understand is what's driving people to be lifers, you know, in your organization. Is it, you know, there might be multiple reasons. You know, is it that they are just so bought into your organization and the purpose and the job that they are doing that they couldn't imagine themselves working anywhere else? In which case, you know, you probably want to get the best out of them by helping them to tell their story more and leveraging that pride they have to help build engagement elsewhere in your organization. Or, you know, is it that actually, you know, you just pay so well that there's no reason for them to leave, or the benefit is you've tied them up in knots with a series of complex benefits packages that they may lose out financially if they move, in which case, you know, that's not a great place to be. And actually you might want to look at, you know, not necessarily fixing that for that particular set of workers, but you'll find that that's tying other people in other generations, you know, to your business for all of the wrong reasons as well. Yeah. You know, or is it something else? You know, and actually the way you engage each of those groups will change. I think what does kind of cut across all of those reasons is the same stuff that cuts across the rest of the generations, actually, which is one of, you know, empowerment, you know, this, all the self-actualization stuff, the opportunity to get involved in things outside of their day job if they choose to, but without the pressure of needing to, and the opportunity for them to really bring the decades of experience and skills they've got to bear without necessarily having to go down the route of line management. I think that's a mistake a lot of organizations increasingly make. If I want to stretch my breadth of work, if I want to bring all of these different skills I have to the table, I have to take a more senior role, and the more senior roles generally come with line management, which I may or may not want to do. So how do you help, you know, give these people the platform and the opportunity to really get involved in stuff that lights their, you know, lights their fire without the need to step into increased hours, increased responsibility and line management?
Yeah, I totally agree. I you know, the Peter principle, the promoting people to the highest level of incompetence is often what you'd find with this. And we run out of options to what we can do with them. So, we'll make them a manager. They're a great technical expert, but this line management, it just isn't their bag. And you know, it can lead to a lot of unhappiness for everybody. So I totally agree with you on that. So I just want to go back. We've touched upon some of the benefits. And the advantage, you know, the business case and the return on investment. I know when you spoke, you talked about the what you referred to as the halo effect, which I think we kind of referred to, you know, it's kind of a rising tide raises all ships. If we're looking after our older workers, we're probably looking after our older customers, and we've already identified they've got a lot of money to spend potentially with us as well. Is that the correct definition of what the halo effect? Were there other halo effects that you recognized from this this cross-generational initiative?
There are. So I think there's there's some challenges with having an increased number of older workers in the workforce generally, which are pretty well defined, and most businesses would recognise them. So, you know, things like they are likely to have more health problems, they're likely to need more accessibility provision to do the job. So whether that's things like screen readers, whether that's things like accessibility to the stores or to your offices or to other pieces of kit or tools that they use to do the job, you know, that will need to be taken into consideration. Job design might need to change. You know, some of the tasks you might ask some people to do might not be relevant. So I just take the retail example because that's the one we've been flowing through. You know, older workers might not be able to work outside for long periods of time. They might not, you know, be able to unload trucks full of stock and put them up ladders. They might be able to do some of it, but not all of it. So you might have to look at how do you design and assign tasks a little bit differently than, you know, here's a job description, so you do that job and you do those tasks. So you'll have to be a bit more conscious of how you do that, you know. And also, they're more likely to have care and responsibilities as they get older. Their relatives are getting older as well, so they're going to need potentially more flexibility in when they work and how they work and where they work. So I mean, there's some of the challenges you're probably going to, we're all going to have to face into in the coming years.
Yeah.
But in actuality, you solve, you know, you can look at that as the lens of a challenge specific to older workers, but it's not really true. And solving those problems because you want to attract a more cross-generational workforce, it helps impact the rest of the workforce as well. So, you know, things like older workers needing more flexibility because they're carers, well, but that is also true of people who are single parents or people in families where both partners work. And so traveling and with commutes getting longer and longer these days, you know, they're more likely to want flexible working arrangements or working from home at different times to go and pick up childcare. So you'll solve one problem, but the halo effect is actually what you've done is increased the way your business deals with flexible working arrangements for everybody. And the same with job design, actually, you know, by re-examining how you assign tasks rather than it just being like this job does those tasks, you know, thinking about that differently doesn't only benefit older workers, it might also benefit, you know, people with underlying health conditions who are not older, who are just younger generally, or who have different issues. You know, maybe it's you know, non-visible disabilities, which just impacts the type of job they're comfortable doing, the type of tasks they're comfortable doing. And so actually what you start to do is build a way, a methodology within your business of giving them people the work that they can produce best and make the greatest contribution to. And then obviously you've got the other things like, you know, if you have better access to your sites and your offices for your people, that the same is then true for your customers or for suppliers or people you work, partners that you work with in your business. So, you know, the challenges thrown up that we traditionally attribute to older workers are they're more visible in that group, but they're not specific to that group.
Yeah. Okay. Are there any other challenges that you would identify? I mean, I guess one other thing which is relevant to our audience is communication. And I know you said earlier that it's a gross stereotyping of people over 50, 60, perhaps not being as tech savvy or not. But did you in your experience or in your experience now as well, have you found any that you have to differentiate your communication strategy for when you've got a more cross-generational workforce that you can't rely? I mean, I guess it's good practice not to do that anyway, to rely on only one or two channels. But what's your experience of that?
I think what I found is the channels are very rarely the issue, and it's usually the content, as is true with so much of what we do. Yeah. But I mean, there are some small things. So and it goes back to the halo effect again. So things like, do you always put subtitles on your videos? Maybe not. Some organizations do, some organizations don't. But by doing it, you also solve another problem which many organizations have, which is, what if I've got people out in the field or working in stores or out on customer sites who can't necessarily listen to the audio? Well, you've by fixing one problem, you solve the other. And so why wouldn't you? I think what I have found challenging as a communicator is when I deal with stakeholders in particular, particularly around things like social, is a good example. You know, I quite often hear the feedback that, but what about our older workers? Because they're not going to use social media. I put, well, course they will, because they do at home. Like, you know, my mum and my gran and my aunties and my uncles, they're all on Facebook and other social media channels are obviously available. And they use them in their day-to-day life, you know, and there's some interesting stats. Like, so 78% of people over 65 say they use the internet regularly, so every day or more or less every day. 76% of them use it for communicating with people, 65% of them use it for surfing, browsing and shopping. So given that we all, you know, the audience already use that in their day-to-day life for communication, why when we get in the workplace we suddenly think, oh, but they can't use social media at work for communication? They can, they absolutely can, but the challenge is not one of channel, it's one of perception and I guess a bit of culture. So the perception that actually, if I say something a bit silly or I use social media wrong in my personal life, the risk is minimal. But at work, it really matters. And I really care. And I'm worried about making a mistake because perhaps I'm a bit less comfortable with this particular layout of, you know, whether it's Workplace or Yammer or any of the other social channels or bespoke one. And so I'd rather do nothing than get involved in that. But that is not restricted to older workers. Actually, that is just true of enterprise social media. It just tends to, I think the older workers are more willing to speak up about it. So there is that challenge with the channel. And all stuff that can be overcome though. And actually, once you unlock that capability, actually what you find is they are just as likely, if not more likely, to get involved, post great content, start great conversations. And to the point we made earlier, it starts to unlock some of these things that you didn't even know they knew or had experience in, because they are exposed to more of your organization than they were before. They see more of the conversations than they did before. So, I think there's no particular challenge with older workers than different members of the workforce, but there are challenges around how your stakeholders will perceive them, I think, and perceive some of the strategies you might want to put in place.
Yeah. So if someone listening to the show, if anyone listening in wants to, you know, this is kind of thought made them think, and they want to kind of, you know, obviously it's not something you're just going to kind of click your fingers and do overnight. But what would be some sort of sensible, practical steps that you could take if you felt actually we've got an opportunity here? We have got we've got an opportunity to engage our older workforce or cross generational, or be more embracing of a cross generational workforce. What would be a good starting point? Are there any books, any kind of papers that are worth reading, any resources that are worth finding out and really digging into this a bit more?
Oh, crikey, do you know, when I was doing research for this topic, it actually started out because we did an experiment in B&Q many years ago, long before I joined B&Q, about staffing a store entirely with older 50s, and the scores were, you know, the business results were amazing, just phenomenal. And I stumbled across it by accident. I was like, oh, that's interesting, stroke was on, that's not what I thought the outcome would be. And so I started to look more closely into it. And actually, you know, there isn't very much out there, if I'm honest. There is very little in the way of really good, robust research. And so if you're, you know, if someone is looking to start something like this, I think, you know, step one is listen to, listen to your people. I mean, it sounds a bit like teaching people to suck eggs, right? But actually, they, you know, what I've certainly found is if you can bring them together into a forum, you know, not massive, but small working forums, say, hey, what's really working for you? What do we do that's really good? What do we do that's terrible? They're more than willing to share that opinion. And I think the other thing, my other kind of strong advice would be, don't make it a communications thing, or if you work in engagement, particularly employee engagement, don't make it an employee engagement thing, because it really isn't. And what you'll find is you risk carrying the can for a whole wealth of things. You know, you're going to need the support of the HR teams, of line managers across the business, of facilities, of IT, because what you'll probably find is you've got a couple of IT issues that need sorting, some accessibility issues that need sorting. There's going to be some ways of working that need to be changed. So if you're really serious about this stuff before you kind of dive in, I think you need to decide who your allies within your business, who else is really passionate about this, and can you build enough momentum to really give it a go? Because there's nothing will disengage people worse than asking their opinions, getting lots of feedback, and not actually being able to deliver on any of it.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. I totally agree. Well, that's been really interesting. So just before we wrap up, and I tend to do this with all our interviewees, uncover something that we didn't know about them. But I did a bit of research on you, and I found out that you used to be a train driver very early in your career. So I've always wanted man with a small boy inside the boy. Always wanted to think of you be a train driver. What's your most interesting or kind of weird story from your days as being a train driver?
What's my most weird story as a Do you know let me tell you what surprised me most about being a train driver, and the thing you get most from friends and family is the old, are there leaves on the line? Is that why you are? Is that why everything was running late? There was leaves, and it sounds bonkers. And before I was a train driver, and it's probably a communications lesson in here for everybody, but before I was a train driver, I was of the exact same opinion. Like, that is a bonker. How can leaves, you know, slow down a train? But I want you to become a train driver, and you get out and you've got this, you know, 100-odd ton metal, you know, train going in one direction with metal wheels on metal rails. You suddenly become very aware of the fact that leaves are mostly made up of oil. And so when they get crushed and compressed, what you actually have is metal wheels on metal rails with oil in between. And if you're going, you know, I used to drive trains from Manchester to Chester quite a lot, and there's quite a lot of hilly areas. It's quite exciting when you put the brake onto something, and then when you take it off, you're going faster than when you started to brake. That will definitely make your toes curl. So I guess that is the most, I guess, insightful and interesting thing. There's loads, like, you could write a book about the things that happen on the railway, but that is something that I think the industry has never done a great job of tackling, really, helping the general public understand, you know, just how many services run on those lines every single day. And, you know, 1 or 2 minutes here or there is cumulative, and, you know, oil all over the railway tracks is something that definitely has an impact.
I remember seeing I think it was at Paddington or Victoria a few years ago, and they had a really good video. There were just little infographic videos running, and it was basically kind of explaining to customers why ice on the line. I think it was ice at the time. I think it was leaves on the line. But anyway, it was kind of just showing you the kind of physics of very similar to what you've just said there. And I think I think you're right. I think, you know, it's a bit of a kind of running joke, isn't it? You know, leaves on the line. And I knew that actually from sort of how I kind of interested in things like this myself. But I did know that was a fact. And people like to moan about these things, don't they? And blame our national institutions and railway services. And anyway, so look, Martin, how if people want to connect with you, find out more about your work and what you do, any ways that you're happy for them to get in touch with you? I mean, I've got your LinkedIn profile, which I can happily share on the link when we put this on the website. Any other ways that any other way they can find out about the kind of work that you've been doing more latterly in your career?
I mean, LinkedIn is the best one, so I'm pretty active on there most days, although, you know, it's COVID-19 madness not getting in the way. Most days I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, so if anyone wants to drop me a line or have a conversation, you know, I'm more than happy to have a chat and share my very limited wisdom with them, and you know, give any general hints or tips or advice, or if anyone just wants to connect generally, you know, more than welcome to.
I disagree with you, Mike. No, I think you have a considerable, and I think you're building up, and, you know, and I honestly mean, you know, you're building up a real expertise in this area, and you know, I think you're already an expert, and that's why I wanted to talk to you, because, you know, every time I've spoken to you about this, I've spoken to you after your speech, I've spoken to you a couple of times since, and obviously today, you know, you really speak with passion, and I think it is an area that you know, I think it has been overlooked. I don't think anyone's really doing anything other than, you know, the stuff you've been talking about today. I think it's an area that gets a lot of nods and token comments, but I think actually doing really something about it and actually seeing it as a almost as a competitive advantage, I think, is really, really unique. And I thought, you know, your story around that is fantastic. So all I can say is thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it, Martin. And thanks for everybody for listening. So back to slightly overcast Swindon then.
Yes. Although not back to, and just I've been here for a while.
Yeah. Been here for like 50 days.
But yes, it is lovely, actually. I've got a two-year-old boy at home, and so having more time to spend with him has been an absolute joy. So, silver linings.
Fantastic. Well, anyway, we'll take care, Martin, and thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated.
Thanks very much.
So, thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. Hope you found this episode useful. We'd love to get your feedback and thoughts about the show. So, and also any questions or ideas that you've got for things you'd like us to cover in future episodes. So, you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form on our website, which is engagingic.com. Also, you'll be able to sign up for our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show, new episodes, and also anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications or employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it via your podcast service. And also, you can subscribe to it via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you know anyone else who might be interested in the show, please distribute it to them. Please let them know about it. We want to try and grow a community of people here who are contributing to the show, giving us new ideas for episodes and things that you'd like to cover in future. So thank you very much.